This is Radio EcoShock with your host, Alex Smith.
Bitcoin and blockchain, they're breaking tech used by a growing public, even though few of us understand how cryptocurrency even works. Now we find out this new money could be a threat to our future climate if it unfolds as it might. Let me just read from this University of Hawaii press release, quote, "A new study published in the peer-reviewed journal Nature Climate Change finds that if Bitcoin is implemented at similar rates at which other technologies have been incorporated, it alone could produce enough emissions to raise global temperature by 2 degrees C as soon as 2033, end quote. 2033, now if that's true, that's shocking stuff. And to find out more, we've reached a co-author of the new study, master's student Randy Collins from Honolulu. Randy, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Hi, how is it going, Alex?
It's going well here, but it got me wondering, you're part of the Department of Biology. Why are you also part of a new study on Bitcoin?
So I am in the biology department working on my master's and transitioning to a PhD. However, I'm also very interested in climate change and the effects on species diversity and conservation of organisms on the planet. And there was an opportunity to join a group of colleagues, interdisciplinary, so people from different departments that bring different expertise and work on large-scale analysis of a broad pressing issue. So I joined the group, and there in the group we discussed ideas and what issues we're presenting currently and where, what kind of data we have to analyze. So that's how I got involved with this project regarding Bitcoin.
I've never used it. Have you ever used Bitcoin personally? And if so, how easy is that transaction, say, compared to using a credit card to pay for something?
I have not made a purchase with Bitcoin. I personally have not made a transaction with Bitcoin. However, looking into the platform and being familiar, it's quite easy to complete a transaction, especially now. There are many applications that you can use to create to process your transactions and many websites that you can go to access the Bitcoin platform. So it's much like using a debit or credit card online.
Well, I heard an interview on National Public Radio, and Douglas McCauley was suggesting that some Greens really like the blockchain tech behind Bitcoin. They think it could help track many complex things like carbon emissions or reforestation. It was sort of a rah-rah thing, but they haven't heard your science. Now, should people accept cryptocurrency and blockchain as the next big thing, as a way to help the planet? What are your concerns about that?
That we looked into, blockchain technology, when it was developed, it took about over 10 years for it to be implemented into a currency, right? Bitcoin took existing blockchain technology and developed it into this decentralized cashless payment system, which has a lot of pros associated with it, just kind of taking out the middleman, reducing third-party fees and whatnot. Blockchain technology in and of itself is a great innovation, and I think it can propel us forward. However, in the case of Bitcoin, when using this blockchain technology, there's an associated proof of work that must occur, and it basically it verifies the transactions that occur on the Bitcoin platform. And it is that proof of work process that is so incredibly energy consumptive. So that's where the problem lies with the verification process. There are other alternatives to proof of work, however, and some cryptocurrencies use these alternatives, such as proof of stake or a hybrid of proof of work and proof of stake. So cutting out the proof of work or modifying the structure of the proof of work can drastically reduce the resulting CO2 emissions.
All right, so we better stop and go back a little bit. Now, I make a transaction, and that somehow is gathered up into blocks And where does the proof of work come in, and why do we need it? Why is it being used?
So the Bitcoin platform is decentralized, right? Meaning there is not a bank that oversees the process or a centralized entity that oversees the transactions. So it's all of the members of Bitcoin community can access, we'll call it a ledger, right? A record of all transactions through the history of Bitcoin. So every member of Bitcoin can access this ledger and verify it. So as you mentioned, a transaction goes into a block. So if I want to send you $5, I announce that to the platform. I put that out there. All Bitcoin members can see this transaction, and we need someone called a miner. So Bitcoin miners take the transaction, put it in a block. Then they need to verify that block before the transaction can be complete. So before I can send you that $5, I announce it, it needs to be verified so that I don't send you $5 while I send three other people $5 and then I don't have any money left after one person gets the five, right? So to verify that process, after a miner puts transactions into a block, and a block has a limit on how much data can go into each block, so X amount of transactions allowed, that verification process occurs through a complicated algorithm that needs to be solved. We call this a cryptographic hash function. And so a miner uses a computer, a mining rig, to solve this complicated algorithm. And that takes about 10 minutes on average to solve each block, and that is the energy consumptive process, that complicated algorithm being solved for.
Well, yes, and your paper goes into the economics of this, pointing out that in May 2018, doing the proof of work for a single block would pay out about $116,000 U.S. for that 10 minutes of computing time. And I thought, wow, that sounds pretty profitable. And according to a site called digeconomist.net, that tracks such things, 23% of that payout is profit. So that's a pretty high profit margin. It makes me wonder why every server farm in the world isn't just out there processing Bitcoin data and making big money.
Right. I mean, it has become very profitable with the value of Bitcoin increasing. More people join the platform to mine Bitcoin, right? So in the early days of Bitcoin, 2009 on, most miners were just folks at home using personal computers, CPUs. However, the way Bitcoin works for the proof of work, let me back that up a little bit. The genesis idea of Bitcoin was to have a block solved about every 10 minutes, right? So if you add more people to the platform and the difficulty of solving the block stays the same, the block will be solved faster with more people. So the Bitcoin network is set up where the more folks that join the Bitcoin platform and mine to solve the blocks, the more difficult the algorithm becomes to keep that 10-minute interval on average between blocks solved. So the more difficult the algorithm is, the harder the mining rigs need to work and the more electricity it takes to solve these blocks. And because of that, it is incredibly expensive to mine for Bitcoin now. So we've moved from using CPUs, people started adopting GPUs to mine Bitcoin in about 2011. Something called field programmable gate arrays, FPGAs, came on the market. Folks started using these to mine for Bitcoin. And now, in late 2011, something called an ASIC, an application-specific integrated circuit, is now the standard, the gold standard for mining Bitcoin. So what the ASIC is, it's a piece of hardware that is built and designed specifically to mine Bitcoin, the cryptographic hash function associated with Bitcoin. These ASICs are incredibly powerful, and they solve for 14 terahashes a second. That's astronomical, literally. And they're incredibly energy consumptive to supply the power to do these processes. And so that factors in a high electricity bill. So the cost it takes to mine for Bitcoin has now kind of pushed out the little guys, right? Anyone at home wanting to mine on their computer, they don't really stand a chance with all of these ASICs mining Bitcoin now.
And it's mind-blowing, but then we get to the bottom line. What is the estimate of greenhouse gas emissions for the Bitcoin industry for 2017?
Yeah, so all of the data for Bitcoin is accessible. You can access that. You can see every block solved and added to the blockchain since the history of Bitcoin in 2009. There are currently over 500,000 blocks on this blockchain. So we accessed the 2017 data. And with every block, you can see how many transactions were in that block and who won the block, right? So what miner won the block, whether it's a mining pool, so a group of people that work together, or an individual. So we use that data, and we found the country that the mining pool or individual is associated with and looked at their main source of electricity, so their energy fuel mix, and use that to calculate the CO2 emissions per block. All in all, we calculated that in 2017, Bitcoin usage emitted 69 megatons of carbon dioxide equivalent. So that's quite a lot of carbon emissions. I've seen it referred to as equivalent to about 17 power plants. So that's from 1 year with Bitcoin.
17 power plants going full out 24/7. Just to process Bitcoin, and we're still in the infancy of this cryptocurrency, and it could blow up much bigger than that, and that's really the point of your paper is, what happens when it does blow up much bigger than that? So what kind of projections did you work with, and how did you come to the frightening 2-degree mark coming so soon?
Bitcoin, we looked at Bitcoin as it's been adopted. Right, as a new technology emerges, if it becomes broadly adopted, we mirrored that to other broadly adopted technologies, right? And so we took about 40 other broadly adopted technologies and analyzed their trajectory, so their rate of adoption over time. And we used things like common household appliances, washing machines, water heaters, e-book readers, electric power, color TVs, etc. So,
now, can I just stop you for a second? Were those adoption rates just for the United States or globally, or how did you work that out?
We took the 40 different technologies, and the data came from the United States reference, and then the credit card data also from the Federal Reserve Bank of Philadelphia. That's where our data was drawn from for these other technologies.
That's a fascinating subset of this paper right on its own. I mean, just looking at how fast technologies move out into society and what percentage of the population use them. And as you say, it's color TVs, it's power steering, it's smartphones, and it's air conditioning, all sorts of interesting things. But I have to wonder, adoption rates by larger populations will be the key, like India, China, Brazil, and they may be faster than it happened in the United States because it's all known already, or it may be slower because people can't afford it. How could you predict global rates for technologies used in this study and then project from that Bitcoin usage?
There have been a few analyses of the electricity consumption of Bitcoin, and we referenced a couple of them in our paper. You had actually mentioned the DigiEconomist website, and DigiEconomist does do estimates for Bitcoin energy consumption. Also, a paper by Fontanus that came out in 2018, I believe, looked at the energy consumption. So, but they use different methods for analyzing this. So we thought about all of the approaches that we could take to look at the energy consumption and then our prediction power going forward. And we are unable to predict the fate of Bitcoin, but we wanted to look at if it did follow the rate of other broadly used technologies, whether they be quickly adopted or adopted on a much more slow pace, what the outcome could be. And so looking at Bitcoin on these trajectories, it's still an astounding number. Even if Bitcoin follows the most slowly adopted technologies that we analyzed. It still produces, you know, the emissions necessary to reach that 2-degree threshold in about 22 years, if it follows the slowest broadly adopted technologies. We decided this would be a good way to look at the Bitcoin future.
Well, this is so weird because we are looking in official papers at the IPCC of getting to 2-degree warming or trying to stay under that by 2100. But now we're talking, and when we worry about those things, we usually worry about things like deforestation, the loss of Arctic sea ice, and other major factors. But just the introduction of a new technology, if it goes viral and if it keeps going and succeeds at the rates of other technologies, that could do us over the 2-degree danger zone by in 22 years. I mean, that's amazing that we could have that happen in a human population.
Maybe the reality of climate change and its subsequent effects, like changing climates, increased natural disasters, food, crop shortages, etc., drought, might just seem a little unrealistic to many people, right? It's hard to imagine that happening. And it isn't new. We've been aware of this problem for decades, and now we're kind of at this critical point. We need to take action. And somebody asked me recently, why should we worry about Bitcoin? We have these other issues, right? Deforestation, agriculture, fossil fuels. And it's not a choice to pick one or the other, right? We need to focus on all of these issues. Now, currently, Bitcoin is not at the level of those big emission polluters that I just mentioned. But if it does follow these rates of adoption, it could happen. And as you mentioned, all other emerging technologies potentially could carry the same fate. So this study is really important to me as it can highlight the importance of assessing emerging technologies and upcoming sectors of development and keeping the carbon footprint in mind, right? Being aware and engineering into your technology mitigation strategies, because we are at this critical point, definitely.
I think anytime humans make a change, we have to be aware of success, of what happens if something really takes off. You are tuned to Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith. My guest is Randy Rollins from the University of Hawaii at Manoa. And we're talking about how Bitcoin could break the climate bank, so to speak. And Randy is co-author of a new paper in Nature Climate Change titled Bitcoin Emissions Alone Could Push Global Warming Above 2 Degrees C. Your paper does touch on several solutions, and I suppose the first way to avoid 2 degrees with Bitcoin is that this digital currency fails. Perhaps spectacularly, is that still a possibility?
Bitcoin is a volatile market, right? We see it jump up and skyrocket in value for Bitcoin and then decrease. But there is a general trend in an increase. And I can't predict the fate of Bitcoin. I think that the idea, the technology, the decentralized cash payment system is a way of the future. And it just needs to be, the emissions need to be mitigated, right? And I mentioned when we first started speaking, Alex, that Bitcoin uses a proof of work to verify transactions so that we can make payments to each other on the Bitcoin network. If that proof of work is changed into a proof of stake verification process, that could drastically reduce the CO2 emissions. So that's one way to mitigate this issue. Also with Bitcoin, something like I mentioned in a block, there's a cap to the number of transactions that can go into the block. Actually, technically, it's the amount of data that can be inserted into a block. If we raise that cap, so if more transactions can fit into a block, that would drastically reduce the emissions associated with Bitcoin as well. So there are alternatives to this issue. Also, using green, sustainable energy sources would completely mitigate these problems, as well as other sectors and industry. So I think using green, renewable resources is key for the future of Bitcoin or any other cashless payment.
Yeah, so why couldn't we just move the data mining to a place that uses renewable energy, but I guess you'd have to have governments mandating that. And I also wonder about gaining efficiency in the actual computers used to do this. I mean, the manufacturer of Bitmain's Antminer S9 computer claimed their new model has 3 times the power and twice the efficiency of their previous S7 model. So maybe also hardware improvements. But I guess those hardware improvements are never going to keep up if Bitcoin, you know, like Walmart starts adopting it and Amazon, both those don't accept it right now. But if they did, then it could just balloon way out there.
Right. If large corporations adopt Bitcoin payment, then the system would become flooded and we would need more people to join the network to mine the blocks to verify the transactions, right? So we would be inputting a much greater need for electricity, increasing those demands. And yes, improving the hardware for mining Bitcoin could reduce these electricity draws, right? But we've seen improvement over time, but it's not enough. Like in 2017, right, 69 megatons of carbon just from mining Bitcoin. And we're not calculating the electricity required to keep the equipment cool. That's a whole nother part of this that we didn't factor in. So our numbers are actually conservative in that regard.
And, you know, we talked about the possibility of Bitcoin crashing, but another way that cryptocurrency could really take off is if, in fact, it's the regular currencies, the dollar, the yen, or any other currency could crash so badly that the population flees to Bitcoin and maybe economic difficulties push that warming footprint way out as well.
That's an interesting thought, you know, by necessity, joining the Bitcoin network with the crash of other currencies, right? So Bitcoin is the most well-known cryptocurrency, the large cryptocurrency. And as I mentioned, there are actually hundreds of different cryptocurrencies available of varying platform sizes. And I believe Ethereum, which is another popular cryptocurrency, transitioned to this other verification process, proof of stake. So if cryptocurrencies can do that, if Bitcoin can make that transition or other proofs are developed, methods for verification, then that can help circumvent the issue. Like if the scenario you just proposed, if people flock to these decentralized payment systems due to a fiat currency crash, then that could help prepare us for that.
And another weird part of this whole story is that it seems Bitcoin in particular has also succeeded because it can evade government monitoring or control, and thus it's often been used to move money made by crime or corruption. And if crime or corruption increases, that too could push more Bitcoins and thus add to global warming. Isn't that a strange twist?
Yeah, I guess my thoughts on that are the underground dealings, purchases on Silk Road and et cetera on the deep web are unintended consequences of having a decentralized cash payment system. However, I think that these illegal or shady dealings occur in our society regardless of what monetary system we're using. Kind of if there's a will, there's a way, and it's going to happen. And, you know, I don't know what the direct effect on CO2 emissions or climate change would be from increasing crime, but certainly when folks are wrapped up in, you know, a criminal world or under punishment for criminal activities, then it's more difficult to contribute to decarbonization or climate change mitigation practices. So yeah, that's another aspect to think about.
One thing I really like about this paper is hardly anybody asks when a new technology appears, hey, what happens if this really succeeds? And you've done that, and I like the analysis of other technologies and how fast they expanded. Was there a particular person at the University of Hawaii who really asked this question and said, hey, we've got to look at Bitcoin and see what's going on there?
Yeah, Alex, I'm really glad you asked this. So there was a small group of us that came together to do this large-scale analysis on a broad issue that I had mentioned when we first started speaking. And one of my colleagues on this project, her name is Katie Talladay. She is a PhD student in the geography department here at UH Manoa. And she actually proposed the idea of looking at Bitcoin. We came together for a meeting and she brought it to the table one day. She, you know, Bitcoin had been kind of in the news. People have been, a lot of to-do had been going on about Bitcoin, and she put two and two together and brought it to the table. I started looking into the impacts of Bitcoin. I've been interested and fascinated by this system for, probably since about 2012 or 2013. However, I was completely unaware of the electricity demand and resulting emissions from this platform. So when I started digging into it and all of us in the group looked at this, I think we were all very surprised. So Katie Talladay brought the idea to the table, and we thank her for that.
As we wrap this up, Randy, are you going back to biology studies, or have you always been continuing them anyway, or has the digital world captured your attention?
You know, yes and yes. So I'm still working in the realm of biology and conservation. So climate change goes hand in hand in what I'm looking at, species diversity. However, technology is incredibly interesting. I use a lot of technology for modeling, but as for continuing my studies in the Bitcoin world, we'll see what comes of that. I'm not sure if it's in the future or not yet.
From Honolulu, we've been talking with Randy Rollins from the University of Hawaii at Manoa. She is co-author of a paper led by Radio EcoShock guest Camilo Mora titled Bitcoin Emissions Alone Could Push Global Warming Above 2 Degrees C. And that was published on October 29, 2018 in the journal Nature Climate Change, a prestigious journal. Randy, thank you so much for helping us through the unknown side of secret money.
Thank you so much. It's been a joy being able to talk with you about this.
I'm Alex Smith, reporting for Radio EcoShock.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.